Welcome to Church Unfiltered with Dr. Anthony Copps, a leadership podcast brought to you by Breakthrough Ministry Consulting.
Well, welcome to another episode of Church Unfiltered, where we are powered by Breakthrough Ministry Consulting, where we are looking to help pastors and determined to help pastors and church leaders answer the questions that they are really asking. I am excited today. We have a special guest with us on today. I was sitting and reflecting on being out of regular church service for almost 9 months or 8 months now, and how we are going into an extended period of being out in the wilderness, if you will, as a result of COVID-19. Now, many churches are still not open. Their doors are still closed as far as gathering together, but several churches have begun to open up, and we are excited to have with us on today one who is going to talk to us from both the pastoral angle, but also the medical field. We have with us Dr. Kenneth Kemp. Dr. Kenneth Kemp is the proud pastor of the Antioch Missionary Baptist Church in San Antonio, Texas, but he is also Dr. Kenneth Kemp, medical doctor. He is a pulmonologist also in San Antonio. I looked up pulmonologist, pastor. I want to make sure that I'm saying this right.
All right.
So pulmonologist treats ailments of the lungs and respiratory system, such as asthma, pneumonia, tuberculosis, complicated chest infections, and chronic obstructive pulmonary diseases, including emphysema. Is that's accurate?
That's accurate, yes.
So you are definitely one who can answer questions about this current situation that we are dealing with. But I am so grateful to have you, Dr. Kenneth Kemp, again, pastor of Antioch and medical doctor, pulmonologist here in the city of San Antonio. Thank you. Welcome to Church Unfiltered, Dr. Kemp.
Thank you so much. I'm proud to be here.
Well, I am excited. I need to dive right into these questions. I have so many questions. Here we are, Dr. Kemp. We are in November, about to go into December.
Right.
Who would have thought? Who would have thought that we would be here as March 15th, March 8th was the last time that the church that I serve at, that was the last time we worshiped all together. And here we are in November, going into December, and no end in sight as far as gathering together fully. And of course, we're trying to make accommodations to get as many people as we can, but there just seems to be no end in sight. And so we're going into an extended period of time where people are asking questions. Will this end? What is going to happen? And so I wanted to bring you on because I wanted to hear from you as a pastor, but also to hear from you as a medical doctor. We just need some answers. I know I'm not going to put the pressure on you to solve every problem and answer every question, but we definitely want to hear from you as far as what's happening with COVID-19. Before we do that, I just want to ask you, how are you doing? You personally, how's your family, especially during this COVID season?
Well, thank the Lord. We're doing well. We, like everyone else, we are having to deal with the fatigue that occurs with this prolonged pandemic. I also have been affected directly in that my mother, two of my brothers, my sister-in-law, and a niece, two nieces actually, wow, were affected by COVID-19, infected by COVID-19.
Wow.
I had a cousin to die from COVID-19. And just recently, a friend of mine from boyhood in my small town of Tucker, Arkansas, died from COVID-19. So it wears on us all, and particularly it wears upon those of us who have been directly impacted by it, and also for those of us who are trying to lead churches throughout this pandemic.
Yeah. Well, And I appreciate you sharing that. I too have been personally affected by my daughter my oldest daughter has recovered from COVID as well. And so it is serious. And
yeah,
I was sharing with you just before we started recording, we just even heard in the news that a very, very public figure's son just was, yeah, but just was just announced that they tested positive for COVID as well. So this thing just keeps rolling on. But let's do this. Tell us about yourself. Tell us about what you do. I mentioned what pulmonologist is as far as what I researched and looked into, but tell us from your own words, what do you do as a medical doctor? What is your area of expertise?
Well, I'm actually a pulmonary medicine and critical care medicine physician. All right. So I deal with the diseases of the lung, as you talked about, and there are many of those diseases of the lung. The ones that we most often encounter would be asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and lung cancer. But there are a whole lot of others that we deal with. Mm-hmm. And we also, as intensive care medicine doctors, take care of those patients who have the most severe illness that require them to be in the intensive care unit. Mm-hmm. And so we're sort of the people who receive the sickest of the sick in the hospital and try our best to implement the latest in medical technology and medical knowledge to pull them through. That's primarily what I do. So I work in the hospital, I work in the clinic, seeing folks with a myriad of different types of illnesses.
All right. And then share with us your pastoral background.
Well, I am the pastor of the Antioch Missionary Baptist Church, as you mentioned. I entered into the ministry after already being involved in medicine. I was already I completed my residency and was a chief of medical residence at the time when I accepted the call to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. So I've learned primarily through practical experience. I work very closely with Pastor John Joseph Rector Sr. and also with Pastor E. Thurman Walker. And I was blessed to be able to serve as the assistant pastor, then co-pastor with Pastor Walker. The Lord blessed us and has allowed us to work in this field. When the Lord took Pastor Walker home, I went on by the move of the Holy Spirit and the wonderful people of Antioch to take over the senior pastor role of the Antioch Missionary Baptist Church. It's a pleasure. It's a chore. Yeah. It's wonderful, and then it's nerve-wracking all at the same time.
I can only imagine. I can only imagine. Well, definitely, thank you so much for what you do on both sides. Thank you for what you do. I want us to dive into talking about COVID-19, the church, the impact that it has had on the church. What are you seeing out there from your medical perspective? What are you seeing happening right now out there with COVID and the care that is taking place in relation to COVID patients? What's happening out there from a medical perspective?
Well, as you probably are aware, we are in another surge of COVID-19 cases around the country. We are now experiencing the largest number of daily cases of COVID-19 than we have ever experienced in the pandemic from March up until now. And it has to do with the fact that COVID-19 is no longer concentrated in certain regions or certain states. It's all over the country. And whereas we would have, 20, 30, even 40,000 cases per day, we're now seeing over 100,000, up to almost 200,000 cases per day. And that's been happening consistently over the last about 3 weeks, going into about a month, mm-hmm. where we're seeing those kinds of crazy, ridiculous numbers. In fact, last week, we saw 1 million new cases added in just 1 week in the United States of America. Wow. And people are dying literally by the thousands every day. Mm-hmm. Now, the one good thing, if you can find anything good in this situation, is that we now have enough knowledge about COVID-19 that we're able to implement therapies that either mitigate the severity of the symptoms or allow us to provide enough care that patients don't actually have to be in the hospital. In fact, the majority of people who get COVID-19 are managed at home, as you're probably aware. Dr. Collins, they don't have to come into the hospital now because we know enough about the virus that we know how to manage it in that respect. However, when people get really, really ill, we don't have a whole lot available for treatment. There are a few things that we know about that help reduce severity, like we treat people with very severe COVID-19 with Decadron or dexamethasone. It's a steroid medication that's been around for forever. We use it in moderate doses over several days, and that seems to help people recover. Also, we have been placing people on their stomachs instead of on their backs, what we call prone positioning.
Okay.
That helps with improving oxygenation. There's a new medicine that came out and received an emergency use authorization called remdesivir, that I'm sure a lot of us have heard about. There was a lot of excitement about remdesivir early on. It seemed to be able to reduce the severity of illness, reduce the duration of COVID-19 severe infection, and even some thought that it might improve survival. However, most recently, there have been some doubts as to whether remdesivir actually does what it was touted to do early on.
Okay.
So we're fairly limited in the things that we can do. We support people when they get really, really ill. Mm-hmm. You can't breathe on ventilators, as you know. There's another process called ECMO, which is extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, that we do for folks who can't even get enough oxygen on the ventilator. So those are some of the things that we do. We don't have a cure. We don't have the greatest therapies available, but we do the very best that we can.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. So basically, with the numbers increasing, the numbers that you just mentioned, things that you just mentioned, it seems as if it is worse. It is worse than it has ever been as far as the number of cases. Is that correct?
That's absolutely true.
Okay.
Without a doubt.
But it seems like, and this could just be me, but it seems like the perception is almost because the coverage doesn't seem to be the same as it was, obviously, early on. It was new. It was scary to everyone. But that coverage doesn't seem to be the same as when New York was experiencing what it was experiencing. And so it almost gives a feel of it's not as bad because the coverage is not as intense as it was early on. Do you see that? Do you see what I'm saying? It just seems like the numbers are high, but the coverage is lower.
and I think that is because there's a bit of fatigue in reporting. There's a little bit, I think, of tone deafness, if you will, in the public, because we've heard it so much that we're longer attuned to it as much as we were, say, back in March and April. The other thing that we're seeing, I believe, is that the concentrated cases and deaths that we saw first in Washington State and then in New York City is not what we're seeing now. We're seeing this spread out throughout the country, a lot of it happening in rural areas that were spared at the initial outset of this illness in our country. And so with it being spread out, and in some cases in rural areas, the same level of intense attention is not given. That doesn't mean that we're better as a nation than we were back then.
Right.
It just means that things are spread out more. Also, the other thing that we're seeing is even though the cases have dramatically increased, the number of deaths, while still high, have not dramatically increased on the same pace. And I believe that's because we now have these therapeutic interventions available that I talked to you about. And we also recognize that a whole bunch of people acquire the illness, but never get severely ill. Mm. Some of them acquire the infection, but don't get ill at all.
Okay. Okay.
Those are the asymptomatic people. So say around Thanksgiving, people are wanting to know, I have a negative test before I go to my family. That's what I want. Some of those people never would have gotten a test before, but now they get a test.
Right.
Hopefully the test comes out negative. But some of those people are going to get positive tests who have no symptoms.
Okay.
None whatsoever, but they have a positive test because the virus is now so prevalent in the community that you can get exposed to it without even knowing. Mm. And so those numbers increase. Fortunately, the good part of that is that the number of deaths have not increased to the same proportion. Still high,
right,
but not right to the same proportion as the number of new cases. So I just believe that fatigue, that the constant reporting, the sort of tone deafness that we're seeing has reduced our intense awareness of it.
Right.
But it's still
there. Right. And I hear different messages that come from different sources, of course. Do you think that you just mentioned that the number of deaths have not increased the same as the number of cases? Do you think that that is possible, that that will increase
the number of deaths?
Yes.
It's very possible. Now, again, we've been seeing this crazy increase in number of new cases in the last three, 4 weeks. And generally, the number of deaths lag behind the number of new cases at about a two-week interval.
Okay.
So we really should have been seeing a dramatic increase in the number of deaths already. I just believe that that's because we have newer therapies and interventions. We're more familiar with the virus. When I say we're more familiar, I'm talking about the medical community.
Right.
Not only the medical community, but the public in general.
Right.
It's just more aware about this virus and how to manage things. So I believe that death rate may increase, but what I'm encouraged about is that it has not dramatically increased nationwide so far. We've been in this for a while.
Okay.
The other thing is that when you look at different portions of regions of the country, it is behaving differently. Mm. So you take San Antonio, for instance. We had a tremendous surge back in July, in August,
right,
where our hospitals were being overrun. And we had a lot of pressure placed upon healthcare providers. And our numbers of admissions were dramatically up. Our numbers of deaths were going up as well. And then that tapered off.
Okay.
By September 1st of October, you may recall that the percent positivity of cases in our community went down below 5%, which is what we were targeting.
Right.
It was only 1 week that it went below 5%, and then it started creeping back up. So even in San Antonio, while there is such an awful surge in El Paso, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In San Antonio is not nearly as bad. We're still creeping up in the number of positive tests and numbers of hospitalizations, number of people on ventilators in the intensive care unit, but not to the level as some other regions. And I just believe that's because the virus is going in waves. It hits areas that have a higher population density, like New York,
mm-hmm.
It hits San Antonio, and now it's hitting areas that have a lower population density, but it's more widespread because it's gone all over the whole country.
Okay.
And therefore, we're not seeing the same intense level of say, deaths in certain regions like San Antonio.
Right.
And that decreases our level of awareness and our level of concern, which it shouldn't, but it does.
So overall, do you think that we are headed in the right direction? I mean, are we optimistic? Are we
yeah.
are we still in a very, very, very critical place?
Well, that's a good question, Doctor. I'd have to tell you we're in a bad place. I don't want to sugarcoat this in any way. This is bad, okay? And it has the potential of getting worse because we're right at the point of going to the flu season. And so all of this could potentially get worse. But there is a glimmer of hope, and that rests in the fact that we may, within the next few weeks or so, have one or two vaccines that will be available for the community. That's a two-edged sword, to take a phrase from the church, because the vaccine, while promising, is still experimental. We would get an emergency use authorization from the Food and Drug Administration, which would allow this vaccine to be distributed throughout the country. But we don't have enough data and enough experience to license it, to say for sure we know that it's going to do what it's touted to do. It's still an emergency use authorization. We've had a few things that were given emergency use authorizations that with time turned out to be not so great. One of them was hydroxychloroquine. Another is remdesivir. I told you about remdesivir, how it was touted to be, you know, the next great thing, then turned out to be, maybe not so great, you see. And so we just have to kind of take this one step at a time. There is some glimmer of hope. If people wear their masks, if we get the vaccine, we may be able to reduce the spread. But we have to be cognizant of the fact that the virus is there. It's still in our community, and we can't act like it's not there.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And that's is definitely something that we need to make sure that we are very clear on, that it's real. I know that there are some people, I had a conversation with a person and they were like, well, did you have anyone that was impacted by it? And I said, actually, yes, yes. And so there are still some people walking around just like, hey, this is not real. It hasn't impacted me directly. And it's so unfortunate. Then you have people who say, well, it's better if we get it so that we can get used to it. And you know, the whole herd immunity thing. And what do you say to that kind of approach?
Yeah, I think that's unethical. It's utterly ridiculous from the position of a pastor and from the position of a physician. I'll tell you why. To get the kind of herd immunity that people are talking about, we have to sacrifice literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of lives. Literally, you have to sacrifice that many people. Because what you're saying is, let's just spread it. And a few folks are going to die, but the rest of us will be okay. But you don't know who is going to die. Because we don't know enough about this virus to actually predict who's going to die from it. We know that people who are older, who have comorbid or multiple medical problems, that they're more likely to die from it. But we've seen babies die from it. We've seen young adults, teenagers. My cousin was 42 with no medical problems who died from this disease. My friend was in her late 40s. She died from it. So what I'm saying is, if we want to get herd immunity, we got to be willing to sacrifice lives. And that's not ethical in my from my perspective, from a physician's perspective, and also from a pastoral perspective. It is not ethical. It is not spiritual. It is not godlike to say we're going to sacrifice some so that the rest might live.
My God, my God. Well, I want to transition into that pastoral perspective. Has your church reopened? Has your church reopened? And if so, what did you do to prepare?
So I'm going to say the same thing I heard your pastor say. And that is, our church never closed.
There you go.
Okay. We've been open the whole time.
Right.
Now, how did we go about, you know, being open in this unusual situation? Well, we had virtual streamlined services, and we've had a service in our sanctuary every Sunday since the start of the pandemic. But we've had those services with small numbers of people.
Right.
We don't record our services. Our services are live on Sunday. But it's done with a small group of folks, people who handle audiovisual, of maybe five or so singers, musicians, and then a few preachers in the congregation. Then lately though, we've invited more people to come into the sanctuary, and a few more have come, but we tell them when you come, you have to understand that we can't guarantee 100% protection from the virus. Mm-hmm. You have to wear a mask, you have to social distance, you have to undergo a temperature check, and then you have to exit the sanctuary in a controlled fashion. We don't want you congregating, kissing, hugging while this worship is going on, and even when the worship is over.
Okay.
So with that, we've continued to worship throughout the pandemic. And I think now that more and more of us understand how to social distance, and more of us understand the importance of maintaining those principles, we are seeing gradually more people come to the sanctuary, but still very small overall.
Okay. Well, I ask that question because I have conversations with various people, they always ask, especially with the nature of my particular role at the church, they ask the questions, well, if school is open, some of the movie theaters are open, different things are open, why is the church not open? And how would you respond to that question?
Well, I respond to that by saying, number one, the church is open. And then I would also let people understand that one of the highest risks for transmitting COVID-19 is being in a confined space with a high intensity of contact over a prolonged period of time. That's the definition of a church service.
Right. You're right about that.
Yeah. You got a large number of people in intense contact, and especially in the Black Baptist church, where you're going to be in church for, 2 hours or more.
Right.
Some people can do an hour and a half, even a few can do an hour. But most Black Baptist churches, like mine, will be in church for an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Right.
That is too risky to do in this environment, and I'm using my physician's hat here. That's too risky to do in this environment without putting some mitigation strategies in place. Mm-hmm. And of course, those mitigation strategies include distancing,
right,
reducing total numbers, and reducing time within that confined space.
Okay.
So if you're going to the restaurant, you're going to the theater, you're going to wherever you're going, maybe you're even going to the bars, you're putting yourself at risk by doing so. But if you go into that environment and you come out within a few minutes, that's less risky than being in a confined space with a large number of people over a prolonged period of time.
That's good.
So that's how I would answer. It's a long answer. That's how I would answer. And I would also tell people this, that if you want to come to church, come to church. I even preached a message about welcome to the sanctuary.
All right.
And I allow people to understand, I hope I have people to understand, that the sanctuary is here for you to come and worship. But if you come, you have to come recognizing that there is a risk. And then you have to abide by our social distancing policies.
Right.
And then you just simply cannot come and think that you can, you know, just flout the rules, if you will. And the final thing is, when we reach a certain number, we just reach a certain number and we can't allow any more in the sanctuary.
Right. Okay. Okay. And definitely it is something to look at. Earlier on, it was kind of midway through, I think, there was such a firestorm of different churches, pastors going at it.
Right.
You should open. Well, that was earlier on. Well, we need to stay open, or no, it's it was certain things, theological things that were thrown out. There were different doctrinal stances that were thrown out about opening or not opening and or holding service. Let me say it that way, holding service together or not. I think from a pastoral perspective, there are many churches that are holding in-person services, many churches that still have not, especially Black churches. There's many churches I can name that have opened up, but mostly with our Anglo brothers and sisters. But what do you say to that? There still seems to be predominantly a wide number of African American churches that have not opened up yet. Why do you think that is, or what do you think is the main reason that these pastors have not started their in-person services back up?
Well, you know, I don't know that. Well, I'm not even sure that we could cut it down the line between African American and, say, Anglo churches. I think some of it has to do with what's been touted as an evangelical approach, and what might be more considered to be something other than evangelical, and that's political.
Right.
I don't care how you cut it. A lot of that is political. So some of that may be it. But I think the other thing is, some of us are being informed not simply by this blind faith with completely disregarding any caution, but we're also being informed by issues of public health and science. And so we are trying to incorporate all of that in our approach to our faith. And I just believe that the Lord gives us common sense.
Yes.
And the scripture also says that we ought not to tempt the Lord our God.
All right.
So that if you are in a situation that's on fire and you throw yourself in the fire asking God to save you, well, you might be showing faith, but you might get burned up too.
Right, right.
Because God may not choose to save you from the fire. So you use your common sense and avoid the fire. And we've seen too many people die, and even in church environments, acquire this infection and then die, for us to disregard that. So the Lord gives us faith. He gives us common sense. He gives us wisdom. He gives us doctors and scientists to inform us about the issues that are occurring in our communities. And so we have to use all of that, I think, in our approach.
That's good.
And the other thing that's different, I'm a little bit of a soapbox here. I'm sorry.
It's all right. But here's the thing.
The church in 2020 is different than the church in 1 AD. It's entirely different.
Yes.
Okay. So if we look at 1 AD in the year of our Lord, the church, even at that point, wasn't meeting in these fancy cathedral style buildings that we have.
Right.
As you know, and I don't have to preach to you, you understand this, the ecclesia, the assembly of the saints, was just a group of folk who met wherever they could meet.
Right.
And not necessarily in a big building. And so when the author of Hebrews wrote, "Forsake not the assembling of yourself together," he was not talking about coming to a big building and staying in a big building for 2 or 3 hours on Sunday.
Right.
He was talking about the fact that we come in fellowship with one another. Here's the thing that's happened in 2020. We can fellowship without going into a building.
Yes.
We can have the same kind of fellowship, absent the hugging, the kissing, and the sitting next to each other and spitting on one another.
Right, right.
By simply, accessing the technology that is available to us. That's the difference between the church in 2020 and the church in 1 AD.
That's good. That is good. That is good. And so if we separate the politics aspect of it and we begin to think about the medical implications with this, what would you say to a pastor who may be listening to this podcast, who's trying to make the decision? They're trying to make the decision. So they're hearing right. from a pastor and a physician in you. What would you say to them as they are seeking to make their decision on whether or not to hold in-person service?
This has been something that has torn me apart, actually, internally, as I've had to contemplate this issue, because I miss my people.
Yes.
God's people gathering in large numbers in the sanctuary. What I would say to that pastor who's having to figure all of this out is, number one, prioritize the safety and health of your members.
Yes.
And recognize that if you're trying to get people back in the pews to satisfy your desire to have a large number of people to preach to, that's the wrong motivation. The priority ought to be the health and safety of our members as we come together, either in an in-person situation or either in a virtual environment to right. lift up our Christ.
Right.
And if you can bring your congregation together in your facility while maintaining social distancing or physical distancing, which seems to be a better term now, if you can do that, and do all of those mitigation strategies that are necessary to reduce the spread of infection, then go ahead and do that. Because that's really what I'm doing. I'm saying to people, if you want to come and you want to abide by the rules, right. come on.
Right, right.
But now you have to make sure that you can do that, that you can maintain
yes.
that distance, that you can maintain assessing people for symptoms, and that you tell your people, if you're sick, stay at home.
Right.
If you can do all of that, then invite them to come back to the sanctuary. There's an African-American church in our community that's been meeting for months. All right. I just talked to, I was on a webinar yesterday,
uh-huh.
Les Holland, pastor one of the largest white churches
okay.
in this city. And they're still meeting virtually like we're doing.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's that push and pull, that dichotomy, which yeah. has more to do with, I think, pastoral leadership and philosophy
right.
than it does with maybe race.
Right, right. And sometimes it just really kind of just boils down to what people do right.
Yeah.
Because we love to gather together, hug and kiss and all of that. And it's like, then what do you say? Do you tell them, stop doing that? Get out of here. You know, you don't want to do that.
I do.
Oh, so I'm you serious. Do. Okay.
Yes.
You have to.
I overtly tell people, do not hug, kiss, shake hands. It's written down. And yeah. what we say to our people, we discourage you from doing it. I've had a few funerals. And then the few funerals that we have at our church, I don't shake hands. I do an elbow bump.
Okay.
I'm not hugging. I'm not kissing. I'm
yes.
I tell people, don't do it. Now, some of them will do it anyway.
Right, right, right.
But I tell them not to.
Tell them not to. Okay. The health and the safety of the members is the high priority. And that's the thing. The gospel is going forth. People are hearing the gospel of Jesus Christ. You're still getting a word. You're still experiencing the praise and worship, the music. It's those things are still happening. And I think that we are being tempted to be drawn into this misconception that if we are not in the building, that we are yeah. not experiencing church. And that is just not the case. And so I've had so many conversations in relation to that. Like, is the word still going forward? But I appreciate that answer, because I know that there are so many people that are even listening that are contemplating whether or not to bring people together again. And so hearing that from a physician as well as a pastor is beneficial. I want to close with this question. I want you to share with us, how do you think COVID will impact the church in the long run? This COVID season.
Yeah.
How do you think it will impact the church in the long run?
Well, in the long run, we're going to be different than what we were before. Yeah. Absolutely. Also, I believe the church is going to recognize that its reach is beyond what we see in the pews on Sunday morning. What we've been doing virtually has reached more people than what we could do by packing that number of people in our sanctuary.
Right.
Our sanctuary is not big enough.
Right.
To reach the numbers of people that we've been reaching virtually.
That's good.
And so I think the church after this will recognize that it has to minister beyond the walls of the folks
right.
who come on Sunday morning.
Right.
I think we also are going to have to be more cognizant of public health as we gather. The church will have to be more cognizant of public health. Even before the pandemic started, we were being cognizant of public health during the flu season. I had people come to me and saying, Pastor, maybe we don't need to be handing out this communion. And we do unleavened bread.
Okay.
In a tray.
Okay.
So many people might touch it. Maybe we shouldn't be doing that. We brought in hand sanitizer. All of that. That was before the pandemic.
Okay.
So from here on out, I think the church is going to have to be cognizant of public health. But this is one thing that the church will never do, and that is to forsake the exhortation of Jesus Christ. That we will do no matter what. And in whatever environment we find ourselves in, we're gonna do that.
That's good. That's good. That's good. And I could go on and on with so many. I have some other questions. I would love for you to be able to come back one of these days in the near future. Is there like a mile marker period or point that you are looking for as a physician, as a pastor? Is there something that you are looking for? And maybe that's the vaccine, as you mentioned earlier. Maybe that's the distribution of the vaccine. But is there a particular thing that maybe even those who are listening that we should look for? Like that particular event, activity, that particular mile marker is something we should keep our eye on. Is there something you're looking at?
Yeah, it's hard to point to just one. If there was any one parameter that I would look at, it would be the percent positivity of COVID-19 testing. When I say percent positivity, I'm talking about the percentage of positive tests in comparison to the total number of tests.
Okay.
If we can get to the point where that is consistently low, and low arbitrarily has been determined in our city to be below 5%, if we can get that consistently low, then I would feel a whole lot more comfortable in saying that the community spread of COVID-19 has been mitigated to the point that we are probably able to go back to something similar to what we had before the pandemic.
That's good.
There are a number of other things that we need to look at. We need to look at hospitalizations, ICU admissions. We need to look at how many people are on ventilators. That is, how well is our hospital system able to handle these situations? We need to make sure we got a number of the appropriate number of testing, appropriate number of tracing. All that stuff needs to be in place. But I think the big thing is if we can show that community spread has decreased and that percent positivity has been low and consistently low, then I think we're able to liberate some of, or be more liberal, I guess, in the way we approach these things.
That's good. That's good. Thank you for sharing that. Well, we want to close out, but I know you are a preacher of the gospel of Jesus Christ. With pastors listening, church staff that listen, we have members, lay members who listen to this. They're weary. This has gone on for, this has been prolonged for 9 months, 8 months, 9 months. Looking again, as I said at the beginning of this podcast, we don't even know when that's going to end. What is a word of encouragement that you want to leave our listeners with?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you, Dr. Kopp, for allowing me to come and be a part of this.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. I think what I would say to people is that we serve a sovereign God. Yeah. And that sovereign God is in charge of all things. And he's promised that he will take care of us.
Right.
Now, he requires that we persevere, even through difficult times, like David did.
Right.
You know, you got to persevere like Job did. You have to persevere. Even John, who the revelator, while exiled on the Isle of Patmos, had to persevere to receive the revelation and the promise that God has given. So while we may be weary, we can't let go of the tenets of our faith.
Yeah.
And in due season, when God gets ready, he will deliver us from this. We have to keep that in mind, that deliverance is coming. In fact, I believe it's right around the corner. He's given us the possibility of a vaccine. He's helped us with treatment. I just believe that that the time is coming soon. We just have to keep praying, staying true to our faith, loving our people, maintain our fellowship, and I believe God will deliver us from this.
Amen. Thank you so much, Dr. Kenneth Kemp, the senior pastor of the Antioch Missionary Baptist Church in San Antonio, and a medical doctor. He is one who can help your soul to be better, your soul to be healed, and as well as your body. And so we just thank the Lord for Dr. Kenneth Kemp. Thank you so much for joining us on today, Dr. Kemp. You have been a blessing to us. And again, I would love to have you come back a little later on, maybe when that vaccine comes out, maybe when some things happen, we can bring you back on to Church Unfiltered. Would love to have you, but thank you so much for your insight and for what you are doing. And we thank God for that, that you are out there on the mission field and doing the work in a way that we can't do. And we thank you for what you are doing.
I appreciate that. Can I just add one more thing?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
On December the 10th, I'm working with San Antonio Metro Health to put together a virtual town hall, if you
That's
will,
good. Okay,
to discuss the vaccines and the potential plan of distribution of those vaccines.
Wow.
And we want to speak directly to communities of color. We know that there has been traditionally somewhat of a distrust of the system,
right?
From those of us who are ebony hued, if you will, and that's understandable because there have been some awful things
that, absolutely,
that this system has done to us,
right?
But I do believe that we ought to talk about it, go over some of the details of it, and we want to be able to do that on the 10th of December. Keep your eyes and ears open. We'll get some more information to you about it soon. We're still working on all the details, but that's what we hope to do on the 10th of December.
Oh, that is awesome. Thank you. I'm so glad that you mentioned that. Please provide that information to me, and I'll make sure that our listeners, and I'll put it on our social media so that everyone can tune in and to hear directly about the vaccines. And that is exactly what we need to hear. We need to know, because there is a lot of mistrust out there. And so we just want to make sure that we have opportunity for that. So when we get that information from Dr. Kemp, I will share that on our social media pages so that all of our listeners will be able to tune into that on December 10th. Again, we thank God for you, Dr. Kemp, and we thank God for everyone who is listening to this episode of Church Unfiltered. We are going to make it through, and we thank the Lord for what he has in store for us. Persevere, as Dr. Kemp mentioned, we have to persevere and keep our hope and our faith in God. God bless each and every one of you. Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you for listening to Church Unfiltered with Dr. Anthony Copps. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss an episode. For more resources related to today's topic, visit churchunfiltered.com or follow Dr. Anthony Copps on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.